You're listening to a Tabletop Game Talk side chat, where we go in depth on a game or topic that's just too big to fit on our regular show. If this is the first time with us, be sure to check out our weekly episodes every Tuesday, wherever you listen to your podcasts, on YouTube, or on our website, tabletopgametalk.com. Now, let the side chat begin. All right, this is session zero of The Lost Mines of Phandelver.
You're such a geeky guy. I love it. Zero-based indexing.
It's a zero-based. So what session zero typically is, you know, learning the rules, teaching rules to new people, getting to know the characters, getting to know the table rules. So basically, we're not actually going to be playing the game in this session. We'll play it in the next session.
Well, I want to play the game.
We'll play the game soon.
Okay.
So this is session zero, and then right after session zero, we'll just go right into session
one. Yeah, you got to fight for your right to party, man.
You do.
So it's really just the first half of session one.
It's the first half.
So it's session 0.5.
Hold on. Since we are recording this, we should probably... I'm Chris, and then we're going to go around the table to my right, because that way, at least virtually, when people are thinking about it.
Clockwise or counterclockwise?
Isn't that all the way
counterclockwise?
Counterclockwise.
Counterclockwise.
Anti-clockwise, if you're from the UK.
So, to my right is...
Sydney!
Yay! And then...
Josh.
And then...
Kitty.
Spencer.
Jesse.
All right. So we are here to learn D&D. Some of us have played before. I've played an excessive amount. But I'm only going to use the rules, the paper, all of the stuff from the D&D starter set. The only thing I've done is I've made some photocopies of the character sheets, so you guys can write all over those. I have some pencils, extra dice, and some paper. Other than that, we're just going with the rules from the character sheet, or from the starter box. So I'm going to start off by... really just kind of going over the rules of D&D. So, Jesse, this is your first time playing, and your first time on the podcast.
Yes.
All right, great. You're going to make a great voice. I like the very short responses.
Thanks.
All right, so on your character sheets. Everyone has a character sheet in front of them. Sydney is playing the...
I am playing the Lightfoot Halfling Rogue.
All right, and Josh?
Yes, I am the Human Fighter, level one.
Nice.
I am a Dwarf Cleric.
Okay, and Spencer?
I'm a High Elf Wizard.
And Jesse?
I am a Human Fighter, one.
Yeah! F5.
Exactly. Now, we'll give them names, and at some point when we're actually playing the game, I will... basically just refer to you as your character name, but right now I'll refer to you as your actual names because your characters don't have names yet. So we're going to kind of take a tour around the character sheet to kind of figure out what everything does. If you notice, on the left side of the character sheet, you have six abilities. These are strength, dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. They're relatively self-explanatory if you just define the word, but in general, strength is your ability to really kind of hit things.
Smash
things in hand-to-hand combat or melee combat, as it may be. So swinging weapons, doing extra damage, that kind of stuff. Dexterity is a great ability. It allows you to shoot things, and it also gives you a whole bunch of, like, you know, your skill offsets, so acrobatics and
stealthy things
and sleight of hand and that kind of stuff. Constitution is your ability to just kind of stay alive. It directly influences your hit points, and your hit points is essentially your life. And then we have intelligence. Intelligence is a ton of different skills that it applies to, as well as helps wizards be smarter and things like that. Wisdom is more of your... so where intelligence is your ability to know things, wisdom is your ability to figure things out. So you can be really smart.
Yeah, so intelligence is book smarts, wisdom is street smarts.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. Wisdom also helps with perception, just kind of noticing things, so that street smartness.
Jesse just wrote a book under intelligence and street.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yes. Yeah. That is exactly, everyone should take notes. If you're not sure, just write it down. And if you have any questions, jump in and ask me. And then charisma is probably the one that's hardest to understand out of the box. It's not necessarily how... attractive you are or anything like that. It's your ability to command a room. Like, your just general presence. You walk in, if you have a high charisma, people are looking like, oh, wow, this person's really cool.
Kind of your influence.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. You have a low charisma, it's like, we're not going to pay any attention to you.
Ability
to persuade, yes. So, a few other things we have on here. Well, actually, let's cover the core rule. So, we have a bunch of dice all over the table. There's lots of different shapes and sizes of these dice. So we have 4, 6, 8, 10, and 12-sided dice, but the most important die is the one that looks kind of like a golf ball, I guess, or a ping pong. It's the one that looks most ballish. It is your 20-sided die. So the core mechanic is relatively simple. If I ask you to make any kind of check or roll to hit or saving throw or pretty much anything, you're going to roll this 20-sided die and you're going to add something on your character sheet. So everyone has your 6 ability scores. If I say make a dexterity check, you're going to look at your sheet, look what your bonus is for dexterity. I'm looking at the rogue right now, which is a +3 dexterity. I rolled my d20. I rolled a 2. I add 3 to it. I got a 5.
That's bad.
That's bad. So 5 isn't a very good
way to not be dexterous.
Well, sometimes that happens. The 2 is right next to the 20, so it's just on the die. So that's it. That's the whole thing. Now, if I ask you to make a perception check, which is a very common thing I'll have you do, if you look just to the right of your ability scores, you have a number of skills. And these skills are acrobatics, animal handling, arcana, athletics, deception, history, insight, intimidate, investigation, medicine, nature, perception, performance, persuasion, religion, sleight of hands, stealth, and survival.
You got and through it.
I know. Sydney was like, it got boring after you said athletics.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah. But those are your full set of skills. And everybody has these skills. Everybody can do these skills. Some people are going to be proficient in them. Some people are not. So on your character sheet, you'll have a little dot next to it. If you have a dot next to it, you're proficient. So your score for that skill is going to be increased by your proficiency bonus plus your ability bonus. So again, I'm looking at the rogue. The rogue is proficient in stealth. So the rogue, well, that's a bad example. The rogue is proficient in sleight of hand. So the dexterity for the rogue is a +3. Proficiency bonus for everybody is a +2. So the rogue's sleight of hand bonus is +5. Now, the rogue has some special ability that can give them even a higher bonus, which is why their stealth is so much higher, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So if I say make a perception check, everyone find what your perception score is on your sheet. Put that number in your head. For the rogue, it's a +0. Roll a d20. And tell me what you rolled.
I got a 10, and I have a +0, so I am a 10.
You are a 10.
Mine was 5, and I have a +3.
All right.
So I'm an 8.
I rolled a 3, and I have a +3, so I have a 6.
All right. Now, that's great. Now we're going to do the math ahead of time. So when you shout out the number, you will, but you're going to do it in that you're going to add those two numbers together before you tell me the number.
Okay.
So you rolled a
17.
And Jesse, you rolled a
11.
Perfect. That's it. That's all there is to it. So if you know the number in your head before you roll the die, you can just immediately add it together because that's the only number I care about. If you rolled a natural 20 or a natural 1 on the die, you can say that as well, but the total is still what matters.
There may be consequences or benefits to that.
Exactly. So skills, you really, when you're going through, there's a number of different things you might want to do. Your skills may apply. If a skill doesn't apply directly, then you'll fall back to your ability scores. And I'll let you know which thing to roll when you try to do something. The other box that's right above skills is saving throws. Now, skills are something there. I want to try and do something, so I'm going to roll a die. Saving throws are the opposite. Something is happening to you, so you're going to roll a die to try to avoid that bad thing. The system's identical, though. So if I'm saying, you just drank some poison, make a constitution saving throw. Everybody can roll their d20, because you all are drinking the same poison, because it was in there. And what do we got?
I got a natural 1.
Which is a total of...
What are we adding to it?
Constitution saving throw.
2.
So you got a 2. You are definitely poisoned at this point.
I got a natural 20, so my saving throw is 22.
All right, you are definitely... You're just like, oh, poison? No, that tastes good. Give me another one.
Iocane powder. I've built up an immunity.
Exactly. So that's what saving throws are. And so I may say make a strength save, dex save, whatever. Dex saves are relatively common, constitution saves. It just really depends on what's going on as to what type of save. So let's look over to the right. You have an armor class, initiative, and speed at the top of your character sheet. And you also have hit points just below that. Attacking is just like we just did here. So if the rogue wants to attack a goblin... Or actually, let's go the other way around. The goblin's going to attack the rogue. The goblin's going to have a bonus to his attack. I'm going to roll a d20. I rolled a 2 again because that's what this die rolls. We're going to add the goblin's bonus, which is a +3, which is a total of 5. The rogue's armor class is 14. 5 is not equal to or greater 14. The goblin misses the rogue. that is combat in a nutshell. So it can be strength-based is all your hand-to-hand and melee stuff. Range-based is your dexterity and that type of stuff. You may have spells that are rolling to hit as well, and it'll tell you on your character sheet what your bonus to hit with spells are. And then there are some spells that have the damage... basically, it's a DC, it's a damage class, which is a saving throw you're trying to go. So I cast this particular spell. The goblin needs to make a DC 14 constitution saving throw, or he's hit by the spell. And then the goblin needs to make a saving throw. That is all of the rules of D&D. Everything else you can kind of figure out as we're going along. But I'm going to cover a couple more things because it does come in fairly often. And advantage and disadvantage are those things. Rolling a d20 is very swingy. It can go from 1 to 20 on a very linear scale, right? So I have just as good a chance of rolling a 1 as I do a 20. But if I have advantage, I get to roll two d20s, and I take the highest of the two. That definitely takes the, you know, swing out of it a little bit more. So getting advantage is a good thing. And you can get advantage in a lot of different ways, setting yourself up for a good sneak attack or, you know, just... There's any number of things.
Is it normally context based on what's happening that will give you advantage?
Yes. Okay. And there's no hard and fast rule. There are some hard and fast rules.
Okay.
But if you're attacking an enemy that can't see you, you have advantage because okay. that enemy can't see you.
Right.
If you're attacking an enemy that you can't see, you have disadvantage.
Right.
Because they can't see you. So those rules are hard and fast. Otherwise, it's really up to me or up to you guys. So if you say, hey, the rogue's gonna sneak around back while the fighter is going to like, no, look over here. That may give the rogue advantage because now the fighter's distracting them, even though if the goblin was looking for the rogue, they would see them.
And the disadvantage is the worst of the two rolls.
Disadvantage is, yep, you roll two and you take the worst of the two. So that's it. There's very little adding extra numbers to things. You're not gonna have to do a lot of math. There's just the one number on your character sheet. And then you add it to your d20.
It sounds like we can just tell you all this crazy stuff that we want to do, and then you just tell us we have to roll for a particular thing to do that crazy thing.
That's pretty much it.
Nice.
Yep. Now, combat's a little bit more structured, so we're going to look at attacks next, which is right in the middle here. Attacks have an attack bonus, which, again, you roll your d20, add your attack bonus. And then if you hit, you roll your damage, and that's where the other dice come into play. So for the rogue, for example, if they hit with their short sword, they get to roll a d6, add 3 to it. I just rolled a 2 because, again, that's the only thing I roll. Plus 3 is 5 points of damage to the goblin that the rogue just hit. And that's all there is to combat. Now, all of your characters have some special abilities, and we'll go over those characters' abilities in just a minute. I want to make sure that we have not covered or not skipped anything. That looks good. Combat. So combat is probably the most complex piece of the game because that's where the rules become more structured. And typically, combat can be run either on a map or Theater of the Mind. We're going to run Theater of the Mind for two reasons. One, it's really easy for me. Two, we're on a podcast, and if we did it on a map, it'd be really boring for people listening. So, Theater of the Mind is I'm going to just describe what's going on, and then in initiative order, you will describe what you do, we'll roll some dice, and the outcome will be determined partially by the dice, partially by the narrative that's going on. It's really pretty straightforward, not any more complicated than that. Initiative, so we talked about armor class. Initiative is when you get into combat, you are going to roll a d20 and add your initiative. You should see a pattern at this point. Highest initiative goes first, and then we just go down the order and we loop around until combat is over. And then you have your movement. Movement is just how much you can move in a particular turn. So when it's your turn, you can move and you can take an action. Typically an action is attacking, but it can be messing with a door, picking a lock, you know, trying to disarm a trap. Pretty much anything you can think of that you can do in approximately 6 seconds, because that's about how much game time an action is. But during that time, you can also move your distance. Again, you have different things that'll allow you to do different things. Different things that allow you to do different things. That makes sense, right? your hit points are, once you get down to 0 hit points, you go unconscious. And once you're unconscious, you start having to make saving throws to not die, which we call death saves. And if you succeed 3 times in your death save, which is rolling a 10 or better on a d20 with no modifiers, then you are stabilized and you won't die. If you roll less than 10 3 times, those are death failures, you just die.
And the 1s or 20s have special things there?
1s and 20s do have special things. If you roll a 1 on a death save, that counts as 2 failures. If you roll a 20 on a death save, you spontaneously heal 1 hit point, and you are conscious again. So that way, you know, you can always get back. Everyone's down and out, and you're making your death save, and all of a sudden, wait, my eyes have just opened up. The villain has his back turned to me. I pull out my crossbow and shoot him in the back. He has a lot of hit points. He turns around and knocks me out again. So any of these things can happen.
I just remembered that I'm not dead.
The last thing you have is hit dice. This is equivalent to your level. So everyone's level 1 right now. So everyone has 1D something of hit dice. The rogue has a D8. The wizard has a D6. The cleric's a D8, I believe. And the fighters are D10s. Which really determines your starting hit points along with your constitution. We're not going to go into character creation. We're using pre-made characters, so we don't have to do character creation. Character creation is a whole nother ball of wax, which maybe we'll do an entire episode on after we do the adventure. What we are going to do right now, though, is go around and look at each of the characters in a little bit more detail. So, and at this point, you're going to have to name your characters. So think about a name. And the parts that we're going to look at in detail are the parts on the right side of the character sheet and potentially the pieces for your attacks. So in the upper right, you're going to see that you have some personality traits. These things just kind of help you understand what your character's motivation is, if you want. What's my motivation? Why am I here? What am I doing? So that is what those elements are there. On the lower right side, it says features and traits. These are things that you can do, as far as like the special for your class. And in the middle, you might have like some special attacks or whatnot. So let's just start to my anti-clockwise right. And we're going to start with the rogue, and that's Sydney. First, what is your character's name?
My character's name, so with this other sheet that you...
The back of the character sheet.
The back of the character sheet has a list of possible names, and it helped me come up... Well, I actually just picked from the list of names. And so I am Cora Toss Cobble, and I go by Coco.
Coco. Got it. And what are your personality traits? Like, give me a couple of those. You don't have to give all of those, but like,
well,
your favorite ideals, bonds, flaws.
So I like, some of these are pretty close to my heart. My ideals are actually people. I'm loyal to my friends, not to any ideals. So everyone else can take a trip down the river Styx for all I care. And then, so my flaws is I have an aunt that I really love, and so she must never know the deeds I did as a member of the Red Brands, and I am a member of a thief's guild, and I am a criminal, and that is why she must never know what I've been doing there.
Yep. So part of your character creation is you choose a background, which is at the very top of your character sheet, and your background is criminal, which you're not a criminal anymore. Now you're a rogue.
I'm a retired criminal.
You're a retired criminal, but that was what you were before you became an adventurer. Now you have a few different abilities here. I think you had a question on the first ones.
Yeah, so it says here thieves can't, and then that is the word that it uses. And so I guess from context, it sounds like a language. You know thieves can't, a secret mix of dialect, jargon, and code that allows me to hide messages in seemingly normal conversation. So I'm assuming that the fact that I know that means that I'm able to understand the world of underground, the underground world, and I'm able to use some of that skill from my past life.
Yeah. Oh, sounds like Cockney rhyming slang. Apples and pears, mate. Yeah, well, that sort of stuff.
Basically, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's just thieves can't is really kind of the language of thieves. And it's that covertness thing. So if you're talking to another thief, you can pass them a message right in plain view as you're having conversations with everybody else.
And I also know where, like, safe houses are and who to avoid and that kind of thing.
Yep. Now, you are also lucky because you're a halfling. So what lucky essentially means, if you roll a 1 on your d20 at any point, you can re-roll that again.
Oh, good. So the 1 that I rolled earlier, I could re-roll.
Yep. So this is on an attack roll, ability check, or saving throw. You can re-roll it, and you must use the new roll, though. So if you roll a 1 again, you still have to do that. You also have a few other things. You're brave, because halflings are brave. But the thing that's important to you for combat-wise is in the middle, you have sneak attack. And sneak attack says, if you have advantage when you are attacking somebody, you can add your sneak attack dice and to your damage. In this case, you get to roll an extra d6. And actually, there's another way of getting sneak attack, which is an easier one. If you have an ally that's adjacent to the target, and you attack the same target that an ally is next to, you also get your sneak attack.
So I get sneak attack in both situations.
Yep. So it's a very, it's like kind of the thieves' bread and butter, especially at level one. You're doing almost double damage, because typically you'd only do 1d6 plus 3, and now you're going to do 2d6 plus 3.
Cool.
So everyone understand what 2d6 means? Jesse, do you understand what 2d6 means?
Yeah, so is that going to be, I roll the six-sided dice twice?
Yes. Yep. Or you can roll 2 6-sided dice at the same time, but yes. And the six-sided die is the square one.
The regular one.
Your regular die. Yeah, so the dice, the regular normal-looking die, the Monopoly dice, Yahtzee dice, those are six-sided dice. You also have a four-sided die, which looks like a little pyramid. These are great for stepping on in your socks. So
all the dice are called by their number, that is the highest number on the die. That's why a D20 is your biggest 20-sided die.
Yep. Let's see, we have D8s, which are above D6s, and they look like two pyramids stacked on top of each other. You have your D10s, which look like a top to me, and then D12s, which look like a soccer ball to me.
What, how about this one? Is the 00, is that short for 0 or 100?
Yep. So what you're looking at right now is a percentage die, so I'm going to sneak out and give you a different D10.
Oh, okay.
So D10s are kind of cool because you can roll any number with them. So if you were to roll this number, that's this D10 is labeled 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, all the way up. If you roll this along with another D10, so if we roll both of those, now we've rolled a 25.
Wow.
So we rolled a 20 on the 10s dice and a 5 on the 1s. So that's what those are. We don't use percentage dice in D&D 5th edition. I think there might be some tables like for the Dungeon Master and the Advanced Guide, but I actually don't even think there are there. But in previous editions, there were percentage dice, so I have a few D10s lying around that have extra 10s digits on them.
I mean, you can always just ignore one of the digits on
it. Yeah,
you
know? And you can just drop the 0. You get the same thing. All right, so let's go to our next anti-clockwise.
Oh, yes. You want to know that I am Flashheart Thundertree.
Flashheart. All right.
Yes, human fighter. Here at your service.
Excellent. And give us some of your ideals and flaws.
Well,
and such.
I like to use long, elaborate words in an attempt to sound smarter.
That makes total sense.
Yes. I'm very sincere. I don't think it's very good to pretend to be something that I'm not. One day, I'm going to bring my town back to its prosperous nature. That's what I'm hoping to do. And my flaws are that I'm convinced of the significance of my destiny. And I'm blind to any shortcomings and the risk of failure.
Yeah, that sounds pretty much... I randomly handed out the fighters, so did a good job there. What are your abilities?
How dare you? I get a second wind, have a limited well of stamina, you can draw it on to protect myself from harm. And then I've got fighting style, I get some archery bonuses, and then I've got rustic hospitality because I am one of the common folk, and so they'll like hide me and stuff, and I can rest and do all sorts of other things if I'm with common folk, which is pretty cool.
Yep. So you're basically, that comes from your folk hero background.
Right.
Your fighting style archery gives you a bonus whenever you use a bow or any kind of ranged weapon, and right. Your second wind allows you to heal yourself. So you can like, it's like, oh, I might be down and out, but no, I'm not.
That's awesome. I'm like basically Wolverine.
Pretty much.
That's what you're telling me.
Now, you can only use it once per combat.
Wow.
So you're a very, very lame Wolverine.
Yeah.
Baby Wolverine.
So that is your fighter. Now, fighters are relatively easy to play. There's not a whole lot of complexity to them.
Smash things.
And if you're brand new, honestly, an entire group of fighters works really well. They just go out and just start hitting things. If the thing is dead before it has a chance to hurt you, you
can
don't need a healer.
Do that sometime? I've always wanted to play a game where just everyone's a fighter.
I'm up for it.
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds like fun. Let's do that.
If you look on your attacks, your longbow, you get a +7 to hit, which is crazy big. Everyone else, I think, is around +5 tops. And then you get a D8 +3 for your damage. So you're doing pretty decent damage there.
Crack that thing open all the time.
All right. Now, every party's favorite class, we're going to go to Kitty, which is the...
I don't know if that's sarcastic or not. I'm our cleric.
No, parties love clerics. Someone's got to be the cleric.
Sure.
All right. So I am Glop Rockseeker. I am a hill dwarf, and I used to be a soldier. I am always polite and respectful, and I don't trust my gut, so I wait for others to act first. I'm respectful. I have 3 close cousins, part of the Rockseeker clan, where I can get favor from them.
Nice.
And I secretly wonder whether the gods care about mortal affairs at all.
They probably don't. I mean,
yeah.
Which is weird, but that's kind of fun for a cleric who's questioning
religion. Yeah.
Yep.
Should we assume a default like religiosity if none is mentioned?
You can sort of make your own religiosity as your default. So the Dungeons & Dragons world in general, the default is the Forgotten Realms world, and there are tons and tons of active gods in the world. So the Pantheon is massive. Right now you don't need to worry about it, but you can check in the player's handbook or online. You can see like, okay, these are the different gods. This is what they kind of go for. Think of like Greek and Roman mythology type stuff. There's usually a synonym god. Is that right?
Sure.
There's not a lot of atheists because like you might have bumped into Zeus last Tuesday.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So there's definitely no doubt that gods exist. It's just
if they care.
Yeah. Do they have your best interest
in mind?
Maybe
you don't care about them. I don't know.
You might not.
If you could be one of these, you know, rebel people.
Yeah.
In this
haven't got halfway around the table, and now we've already gotten deep.
All right. So for my abilities, I have the spellcasting ability. Most of my spells are healing spells or defense spells because I'm a cleric.
Yep.
I am a disciple of life, so that's the healing thing again. As a dwarf, I have dark vision, dwarven resilience, and dwarven toughness, which just are what they sound like.
Yep.
And then since I used to be a soldier, I still have connections with the military, so it gets me some perks when we run into a certain kind of mercenary.
Yep, and now because you're a spellcaster, you have cantrips, which cantrips are spells that you can just cast as many times as you want. There's no limit to them. As long as you're conscious, you can keep throwing them out. They're not the most powerful spells, but they're not too bad.
I don't know. I heard some stories about some pretty powerful cantrips. Can you make water at all?
I cannot, sadly.
Just endless amounts of water. I can just imagine the mayhem you could cause
with that. A lot of mayhem with endless amounts of water. I just got to stop telling you stories. But you also have spell slots. So at first level, you have two spell slots. And essentially what those are kind of like spell points. So you have first level spells, which are a little bit more powerful than cantrips. And you can cast two of them per day. And then you need to rest so you can cast them again. So it's kind of you need to manage your spells a little bit. Should I use it now? Should I wait? Once I'm out, I need to complain to the group to say, hey, we should rest because I can't cast any spells. So that kind of thing. And then the group will deal with you. But if you think it's bad, also you have an 18 armor class.
Yeah.
Nice. yeah, clerics are actually pretty beefy. Like you have a warhammer that does a decent amount of damage too.
I do. 1d8 plus 2 bludgeoning.
Yep. But you only have plus 4 to hit because most of your concentration is in wisdom. And
yes.
You have a good strength, but it's not as good as the fighters.
Yes.
So the really whiny magic users would be the next person. And that is?
My name is Galandan Galanadel. But for those of you with more pedestrian tongues, you may refer to me as Galen Moonwhisper.
Galen Moonwhisper.
That'll take a lot of time to yell across a field when I need your attention.
That is not my concern.
I'm going to call you Gal.
I'm a high elf wizard. According to this sheet here, I use polysyllabic words that convey the impression of erudition. And I've spent a little too long in the temple, so I don't have a lot of experience dealing with, like, people, like, normally.
So you're basically an antisocial wizard.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And basically my background here is that I'm obsessed with my life's work. That's the thing that I most value, and it's very precious to me.
All right. And you also have spellcasting abilities. Yours is based on intelligence, where the clerics was based on wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You have cantrips in the same way. Wizards work a little bit differently, where clerics have a set spell list they can choose from, and they're going to prepare spells every morning from that set spell list. A wizard has a spell book that you can keep gathering spells into, and you can basically prepare any spell that's in your spell book. Now, you are limited by level still. There's certain spells that you just can't comprehend at first level, but as you level up, you'll be able to use more and more complicated spells. All right, and last but not least, our other fighter.
I hadn't thought of the name yet. I'm gonna read off the suggested names and then take a pick. So let's see here. Having so much more variety than other cultures, humans have no truly typical names.
That's true.
Well, maybe in the D&D world. some human parents give their children names from other languages, such as Dwarvish or Elvish. Traditional names. Okay, here we go. Hasiod, Kalashite. Is that the last name, then?
I believe that is the last name, yes. So you have your... Oh, you see, humans are interesting because they don't actually give a list of names in any specific way.
How about Robert?
Robert. I like Robert.
But Jesse has to like Robert.
Yeah.
Do you like Robert? You don't like Robert, do you?
I'm not a fan. no offense to any Robert.
That's a dumb name.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't enjoy being named Robert or being friends with someone named Robert. So take it or leave it. Okay, next is Carrie. Nah. Kosef, that's kind of cool. Amafrey, I don't like that one. So Kahur, don't like that one. Medizlik.
Mixoplex.
We got Meishu or Salazar. I'm going to go with Kosef out of all of those. It's K-O-S-E-F. Kosef doesn't know his... last name, I guess.
It's unimportant from where you're from, I think. Okay. What is your personality trait?
My flattery makes those I talk to feel wonderful and important.
Nice.
Also, I don't like to get dirty. Okay, I'm going to have a hard time with the dungeon component. And I won't be caught dead in unsuitable accommodations, so I'm going to be picky about where we stay.
That makes total sense.
Again, the dungeon things.
Yeah.
Okay, ideals. Responsibility. He expounds further. It's the duty of a noble to protect the common people, not bully them.
Aww.
And the background is noble. And the alignment is lawful neutral.
So we haven't talked about alignment. It basically is a way for me to say, yeah, your character wouldn't do that. So if you're lawful neutral, you tend to say nature has rules, and I am simply here to follow those rules. There's no real good, there's good and evil, but there's a balance, and a balance must exist, is kind of what that means.
It helps you interact with people amongst the party.
Yep. Well, and again, it's basically my way of saying, yeah, that's a little bit too evil for you, you wouldn't do that. Or there's lawful and then chaotic. And lawful is we follow rules. Chaotic is whatever goes. So chaotic neutral is, well, the world's going to work itself out. I'm just going to do whatever. And the balance, the scale will balance. But you have to do an equal number of good and bad things. Otherwise, you start to slide towards chaotic evil or chaotic good. So it's, again, it's a fine, it's a mechanic. It's almost like your personality traits, ideals, and bonds. Your alignment is part of that. So you can play to your alignment as well. And your fighting style is defensive, which is probably the easiest one because it just adds to your armor class. And you have a 17 armor class.
Is that pretty good?
That's really good.
Okay.
So remember, I'm rolling a d20 to hit, and usually at first level, things are adding like a +3 or +4. So I got to roll pretty high on this die in order to get equal to or higher your armor class.
Cool.
That said, you're not very dexterous, so your initiative is going to be relatively low. You have a -1 there. But you have a decent number of hit points. That is our characters. That's our team. This is the adventure. Questions on the rules? Anyone have anything I've missed? Anything on your character sheet that doesn't make any sense?
The equipment at the bottom, can we be expected to have to keep track of how much food we're eating or how much of this we've used up and that kind of thing?
So that basically depends on the type of game we want to play. I personally think having an adventure and creating a story is more interesting than ticking off the number of rations we have. So I will not be asking you for that unless something comes up where it's like, okay, you're going on a long journey and food is going to become part of that storyline. Getting food is part of what you're going to be needing to do. That's when it'll come in. But as long as you're running to the dungeon, running back to town, and you're not gone for more than a day or two, we can hand wave a lot of those ration requirements. But that does also come up with the currency on the side. From the top down, you have copper pieces, silver pieces, electrum pieces, gold pieces, and platinum pieces. Most of you should be starting with a certain amount of gold pieces, probably 10 or 15. That's just the currency of the world.
Spencer's poor.
How many do you have?
Five.
Yeah. That's all right. You're a wizard. You spent all your money on inks and things. To
get I do
spells.
Have, like, ink and... I got 10 sheets of parchment.
What yeah. parchment do you have?
None.
Yeah.
So when you're creating your character, your equipment and your starting gold come from your background. So depending on the background you choose. Also, your background will give you certain skills that you're proficient in. So I don't just a quick around the table, maybe two or three skills that you're good at. We're going to start with Coco.
So I'm really good at acrobatics, and I like acrobatics. And I also have performance and sleight of hand, so I'm able to be that distraction that we need to sneak into places.
You're also the stealthiest at the table.
Woo!
With a +7 to stealth.
Yeah.
So, Flashheart, what are your skills that you're
I've
good at?
I've got a couple here. Animal handling, which is nice. And history, which I don't really even understand how that would help, but...
Well, so history...
I will teach you.
History, you can roll history for any kind of general knowledge. So you come across some weird structure in the middle of a field. Do I know anything about it? Make a history check. And depending on how well you roll, you'll get more information about that particular thing.
Sounds good.
So, and you also have are trained in survival as well, That's so that right. you can hunt things if necessary.
Sweet, I can live off the land.
So, Glop, how are you at skills?
I'm good at athletics, intimidation, medicine, and religion.
All right, makes sense, the medicine thing, and because you used to be a soldier, you have the athletics going for you. And the intimidation will
I'm
just...
Very intimidating.
Yeah. Well, you are very righteous.
Yeah.
So,
and makes... your name Glop, and you have a big hammer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gallen.
I'm best at Arcana, Investigation, and Religion.
All right. Mm. So that's our wizard. Good to have somebody trained in Arcana. That is your ability to figure out what magical stuff is going on.
And Religion, too. The second we walk into a temple, you can tell us what's up.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I'm an acolyte also, so I have connections at temples.
Nice.
So used to be like an assistant in a temple and then decided to go full-on wizard. I like it. And then Kossif.
So, let's see. I've got +5 athletics.
Nice.
I've got +4 persuasion.
Ooh.
And also +3 perception.
Nice. You're also proficient at history, but your history is still fairly low. Remember, proficiency just gives you a bonus, that +2 bonus, but it's still, your stats are going to play into that as well. So,
what if more than one person wants to make the same type of check at the same time?
Then we decide situationally what goes on. So say you're both walking down the field and you see some kind of structure and you're trying to figure out, hey, what's going on there? You can each roll individually, like everyone's making a history check, and then whoever rolls above a certain threshold that I will know will have that same information. Or you can kind of talk to each other and confer, and one person can give another person advantage. So that one person will roll 2d20s, take the higher, and that will be the net result for the group. So it just depends on what's going on. If everyone's trying to sneak past something, you'll all have to roll a stealth check. And in that case, it's more of a group stealth check, where if over half of you make that stealth check and nobody misses it drastically, you're able to kind of quiet the people that are go through. So it really depends on the situation, but it's possible and happens all the time. Any other questions before we start, finish session zero and start session one?
I don't think so.
Can I verify how this whole like spell slot, spell book thing works here? I think I get
yes.
it, but I'd like to talk it out. Okay. So it says I know some cantrips. It's got a list of them here. I can cast them at will. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Yep. Now, so cast at will essentially means it takes you an action or whatever the spell says, but as long as you have the ability to do it, you can cast it. Now, spells have three different components to them, and if you're a spellcaster, you should take a look at the spells. They're in the back of the player's guide in the box set, so you know what they are. But you have seismic, you have vocal, and you have material. So if you can't talk, or you're just, for some reason you have something, a cone of silence or something like that, anything that requires that vocal requirement, you can't use that spell. Seismatic is if your hands are bound, you can't use it. So if you're in handcuffs, you're not going to be able to cast that spell. And then finally, material is it's going to require something to cast the spell. Most of the time, the material items are satisfied by having a wand or a staff. It'll usurp any of these specific requirements, unless it's listed with a gold piece value, in which case then you need the actual material. At first level, that's not going to matter, but that is my way of making sure that magic users just can't do anything. I can, you know, throw a gag in your mouth and handcuff you, and you won't be able to cast spells, and I can take the wizard's sword away, and the fighter's sword away, and this fighter won't be able to attack anymore. So you have to keep that in mind when you're using a caster.
So that seems like a lot of detail. Should I just assume that if I'm bound and gagged, I can't use magic?
For the most part, yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and most of the time, you're going to be free to do whatever you want. It'll just be cases.
I'm not going to be bound and gagged the whole time of
mine? Probably
What kind of game is this?
You said this was Dungeons and Dragons.
Not that Dungeons.
Not that Dungeons. So unless you're in one of those special scenarios, that's when you can check your spells.
Okay.
So
what I was trying to get at when I brought this up. So it says I have 2 first level spell slots that I can use to cast prepared spells.
Yep.
Clear enough. Then I have prepared spells. It says I can prepare 4 first level spells for my spell book. And then my spell book says I have 5 spells on them. So
correct.
To verify all this, the spell book is like, that's all the list of spells I can possibly use. But in any given day, I got to pick 4, and those are the only ones I can use.
Yep.
But I only actually get to use...
2
spells. It can be the same spell twice.
Correct.
Okay. And it has to be from that list of 4.
Right. Right. Yep. So your spell book is the universe, and the cleric works the same way. So the cleric has access to all cleric spells. But you're going to prepare a certain number of spells at the beginning of the day, so is the wizard, which is a subset of the universe of spells available to you. And then your spell slots allow you to use any of those spells as many times as you want, as long as you have spell slots for them. So, and all of the different casting classes, so in the basic set, or the starter set, you just have the cleric and the wizard, and that's how their spell casting works. If you have the full player's handbook, there's a number of other ways that spells can work, and each one of them has a slight variant on how spell casting works. But the general premise of the spell slot is the same. And if you want to think of them as spell points, if that's an easier way to think of it, it's a little bit more video game-esque way, you can think of it that way too. So you have 2 level 1 spell points that you can use to cast level 1 spells that you have prepared.
Makes sense.
All right, and then
one other kind of boring question, I guess, about the sheet. So over here, like for strength, it says +3, and then there's this little oval, and it says 16.
Excellent question. So attributes are actually generated on a scale from 3 to 18, which comes from rolling 3 six-sided dice, 3 being the lowest you can roll, 18 being the highest you can roll. Now, typically, because we're heroes, we actually roll 4 six-sided dice and get rid of the smallest one, but it's still giving us a range of 3 to 18. In the game itself, though, we don't actually use the score attribute value at all. There are maybe 2 exceptions. So when you look at your character sheet, you're seeing these big pluses. Those pluses come from your score, which is really the only time you use it. And the way that is calculated is you take anything above 10, divide it by 2, and round down. So for the fighter, we have a 16 strength. So 6 above 10 divided by 2 is 3, and that's why you have a +3. Now, if you look at the constitution score of 15, it's 5 divided by 2, which is 2.5, rounded down, so constitution is +2. Now, if you're below 10, typically as a starting character, you can only have an 8 or a 9 below 10. That's just going to be a -1. If it were another one below, if it was -7 or -6, counting backwards is hard, it would be a -2. So that's where these pluses come from, are your attributes. Now, I might ask, what is your strength score? And you would say, oh, it's a 16. And that helps me determine how much you could lift or carry or drag or something like that. But if I ever have you make a strength roll or a strength check, that's going to be your bonus.
Okay, so that's roll or check.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing something, I got to think about this number in the middle.
Exactly. And okay. It's usually referred to as your attribute modifier. So you have a strength modifier, dexterity modifier. So okay. All of those are your modifiers.
Can I go on record and complain that I think the modifier should just be the score?
You can.
Okay. I would like the record to show that I think the modifier should just be the score.
We could have an entire – actually, we'd probably have a whole series on some like house rules I like to do. I'm going to play – We're going to play this by the book rules. I'm going to try to keep as close to the sheet as possible, as close to the rules as written. But there are some modifiers that I do in my own game. I don't modify the ability scores because if you do, it breaks the math of the entire game, making it linear. But there are ways that you can kind of play around with those modifiers that make the scores a little bit better. There is one other thing that I almost always forget, so I'm going to ask the table to remind me of this whenever something comes up. And that is, and you shouldn't forget about it because it's the very first thing at the top of the second column that says inspiration. Mm-hmm. And it's an empty box. And people who played with me before may know what inspiration is, but because I use it so rarely, maybe not. So what inspiration is you either have it or you don't.
Well, and if you,
yeah. If you have it, you can decide to use it so that on your next roll of a d20, you have advantage on it. So you just give yourself advantage, and now you don't have inspiration anymore. How do you get inspiration? Well, all of these other things we were talking about, the personality traits, ideals, bonds, flaws, your alignment, if you play to your character and you do something that is in character, not you don't have to act the character, but like the character, your character does something that that character would do, that can be grounds for getting inspiration. So if, you know, I don't like dirty places, I refuse to rest in this dungeon, we're going to have to go outside and rest outside, it's annoying. So you want to be limited on how often you do that. But that type of thing is very in character for Kasif, and that would ironically give him inspiration for being a whiny baby. So, but and you guys can remind me. So if somebody does something that you think is cool, say, hey, I think that deserves inspiration, and I will almost always say yes. You can also give inspiration to somebody else if you can see them. And they're trying to do something, you can say, I'm inspiring that person, and then you lose your inspiration, but they roll with advantage. So that's inspiration. And with that, besides experience points, which you get experience points for doing cool things, and that's how you level up your character, I think we've covered most everything. There are a few things here, the passive wisdom, or passive perception, temporary hit points, those types of things, we will get to in the adventure. We don't need to worry too much about that now. It'll just happen. So that is officially the end of how to play D&D, which we learned how to play D&D in about 15 minutes, and then we learned 5 characters in about 30 minutes, which is really only 6 minutes per character.
Not bad.
And I think everyone...
I'm so excited.
How much time did we spend doing math?
shush. And on that note, we're done. Thank you for listening to another Tabletop Game Talk Side Chat. If you enjoyed this podcast, check out our weekly show if you don't already. It's available wherever you find your podcasts, on YouTube, and at the tabletopgametalk.com website. Until next time, keep playing games and having fun.